Welcome to Yoga Life Lessons.
With myself, Debbie.
Me, Chris.
And also sometimes me, Lowell.
In this episode, we discuss journaling.
So, Debbie, who's pissed you off this week? Don't answer that.
I'm trying to think, actually. I don't think anybody has frustrated me this week.
Well, I know no one's frustrated you this week. Who's left you blowing your lid absolutely entirely off this week? I feel like you've taken this far too seriously, and it was just supposed to be an icebreaker moment.
All right. I mean, I was going in for a serious question, because I'm a very serious person. I have this odd, like, what's it called when you have, like, that thing at the back of your throat? Wheeze.
A wheeze.
I just wheeze at the moment. And I think it's because the air's so cold outside. It's, like, almost taking my breath away.
Are you sure it's not just because you've reached a certain point in your life that laughing just becomes a little wheeze now?
Oh, dear me. No, I think that there was that odd bug going around before Christmas time, wasn't there? And I think some people,
100-day cough.
Some people were absolutely like bottomed out by it, and some people kind of just dipped their toe into it. And thankfully, it just grazed over us. But it just left me with this
grazed over us.
Like it kind of just went. Yeah. But it's left me with you know, when Phoebe has that really sexy voice.
Sticky shoe.
Sticky shoe. with the sticky shoe voice. Well, hello. Anyway, can we start this again, please?
I think we should go from the beginning of the week. I think we should include the January wheeze.
And do you know what? I think that I have been doing that whole chili with ginger.
why the little sniff?
I'm sniffing now.
You mean sniffing chili?
No, because as I was saying it, I just had that memory of what it's like to drink it. You know, you kind of get that hit. So chili, ginger, lemon, and a little bit of salt. Uh-huh. And
on the rim of a glass? No.
There's a shot in the morning.
Okay, well, that makes more sense.
Kind of, you give me the... but you know what? I have to say, I tell you who's annoyed me this week. You know when you have that thing on your phone where it says...
We have to go right from the very start. We can't cut anything out at all now.
Oh, no.
Anyway, go on.
So on your apps, or your banking apps, so it was my banking app, where it will say, rather than call, just go into our live chat.
Yes.
Because you will get a response far quicker. Mm-hmm. So after 50 minutes of waiting for my chat to be responded to, it was just, I mean, they just don't read the messages that you put on. And I had to say to them, can you please just reread? You're answering the question that I've already given you the answer to. So please just answer the question. And then he just went around in sales. And so I just said, you know what? Actually, it's probably best that I just end this chat right now.
It was probably a bot. It's unlikely that it was actually a person.
This robot was called Colin.
It would have been just a really freaked out computer. Desperately learning. What?
This robot was called Colin.
Colin? Yeah. Well, I mean, all the robots.
Hi, my name's Colin. I hope you've had a lovely day. How can I help you?
Did you know
please see above. That really long message I just sent.
Whole, like, AI-generated profiles on LinkedIn.
I do not.
No, Alex told me about it. There's like companies that use AI people as part of their process, and they have like AI generated LinkedIn profiles about the AI people that tells you what they do in the company.
Interesting.
It's not interesting. I think it's absolutely horrendous.
No, yeah, I'm just being sarcastic. You couldn't already tell.
I can't, because I am also on the borderline of actually being a robot.
But no, it just made me think. It's so, like, I had been step by step, said, this is what it's not allowing me to do. This is what I would like to do. Could you advise me on how I do this? Because it's not obvious. And the question, they answered just a completely different question.
Okay.
And I said, oh, no, I already know that because I said this, and this. Mm-hmm. What would you like to know? Well, exactly what I asked in the first question. And I feel like that's kind of the vibe, isn't it? For those bot talks. what is it you want? It doesn't matter, I'll ring somebody. And then you don't ring somebody, and then we resolved it this morning ourselves. So yeah, that's been frustrating this week. However, I have to say, today is the new moon. The vibey new moon is what I was going to say, but then I felt like I sounded a bit like icky. But it is a bit of a vibey new moon.
Concerned about that after the demonstration of sniffing chips.
Well, no.
Don't wanna look daft. Too eager. Anyway.
yes. The new moon is it's a really nice one, but it's a pretty serious one as well. You know, it has some. It likes to have the truth, likes to know what you're asking for, and likes direct instructions. This is why I'm giving as many direct instructions and direct questions for direct answers. But yeah, it's just a really good one. I'm liking it. I mean, it's going to rub some people right up the wrong way, but I really like it, to be honest. I'm writing
sort of
it.
People are going to get rubbed up the wrong way, and how could
people
they?
Who don't like, I guess people who don't like to hear the truth, and B, people who like soft edges.
Okay. Soft edges in what sense?
Soft edges
like being given things gently.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because Capricorn, if anyone knows a Capricorn, you'll know that they've got some hard edges and you just kind of get a ride with it. Horns. Because what you always know, that you'll always get what you ask for.
Okay, from a Capricorn.
I think so, yeah. Or somebody who has those energies. Because there's lots of people who were born within that time that I'm sure don't have that.
What star energy. Sign do you think Colin was?
I don't know. I like all star signs.
All star signs.
I don't know. Do robots have star signs?
I don't know. I'm a Taurus.
Well, yes, we all know that. the soft-spoken bull. but yeah, I don't think that robots have
star signs.
I mean, when they're created, do they align with whatever it is that is occurring at the time?
I don't know, because Mercury affects them.
But does it, though? Is it just the people? Let's not give Mercury a bad time, you know, because people do like to, you know.
Blame Mercury.
And then you can't really blame them. You just have to, you're just being held responsible for whatever energies are occurring at that time. So it's your responsibility. Yeah. So really what you're doing is you're just blaming yourself. Mm-hmm.
So what you're saying is probably people should engage
probably.
with some sort of process that helps them understand what's actually going on in their lives. So
what
they can engage it more
could
effectively.
What process they use in order to do that?
And something perhaps that is well aligned with January.
And yoga.
New moons.
And
new
mindfulness,
lunar years coming up soon.
And meditation, self-reflection, what, intention.
Do you have a suggestion?
Do you know what just came into my mind right there? Journaling.
Journaling.
Dun, dun, dun!
Journaling. Well, we all know that you are a huge proponent of journaling. You have bounds and reams and...
Oh, my God, I love it.
Love it. All around the house, different ones, great big tomes. You even created your own journal last year.
I did. But then still bought another 100.
And still bought another few.
Because I just love them. I just love them. They're great.
So what is it that you love about journaling? What does journaling do for you? Are you regretting wearing that cardigan?
Why? I can always just take it off. It's that time of year though where it's really cold, it's really warm, it's really cold, it's really warm, it's really cold, it's really warm, it's gonna snow.
It is going to snow, supposedly.
I need my cardi. You see, but then it's been promising to snow, or threatening to snow, or hoping to snow. however you look at it. So every day I'm like, I put my cardi on, I put my jumper on because it's going to snow, might snow, and then it doesn't, and then I'm roasty toasty. So...
Why do you like journaling?
I was about to say that.
Well, what purpose does journaling serve for you?
Give me a minute. I guess a journal to me is almost like a therapist.
Okay.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Like my own personal, very beautiful therapist. And this is not saying that you don't need to see a therapist. It could be your, you know, second, third, fourth therapist. But my process has always very much been that I get up in the morning time. I always almost document how I feel when I wake, because I think I have to pay attention to that when I wake, because there's only me who can change how I feel. There's only me who can change what is going on in my head. And there's only me that can understand why I feel that way. Unless there's been somebody snoring next to me or dog barking or something like that, then obviously it's something else.
Someone else is
but right. I'll write that down in my journal. So I always navigate how I feel.
And so do
you
write that physically down in the morning?
I do. So I just have a little scale. And just state how I feel. What is my morning feeling? How is that I feel? And then I say how it is I feel, whether I shade in something, whether I document it down with words, whatever I'm feeling I want to express. From then, I usually write down what it is that I have dreamt about, if I can remember any dreams, what is it that's on my mind that I want to maybe deal with through that day. And this literally takes under 5 minutes. It's when I sit down on my chair, putting my socks on, I sit right down, I'm just like, okay. Write things like that. So it's almost like bomb, bomb, bomb. And then my intention for the day is kind of, you know, my little kind of manifesto, what I usually just want to have that day. If there's something I'm really aiming for big, I'll repeat that every single day, or I'll have a full page where I'll write that down repeatedly so it covers the entire page, so it almost just becomes that repetitive sentence in my mind.
Like a mantra.
Like a mantra. And then I go off and run around the house and rush to get ready and then get out the house, usually running a minute or two late. And then on an evening time, the only time I don't do this is if I've been out on a night out or I've been doing something
so
that's
like
sociable.
Twice a year.
Yes. I sit down again after I have washed my face, and then I'm kind of doing my nighttime routine. And then again, so I come and I'll say what it is that, what was my high point of the day, what was something that I would like to change.
Do you reference the morning or is this separate?
Reference
process?
The morning. So on the evening time is...
Same book?
Same page.
Same page.
Same page. And then on the evening time, I just say what it is that I did, what were my wins? You know, and what I would change if there was anything I wanted to change. So it's almost like a bit of a like an educational thing. I mean, let me say though, I have to say, these things that I would like to change repeat themselves, repeat themselves. But that's fine.
Repeat themselves because they're big things, because they're not only
necessarily
in your control,
always big
or
things. It's just life. And one of the biggest things that I always say is like, I never beat myself up for necessarily repeating a pattern that is just instilled in me. But I do my best to, you know, navigate them. And that's usually about it for the day. Sometimes when it gets to a weekend, or if I have a morning where it's just I have a little bit more time, because I have to say,
not the school run mornings.
No, I mean, yeah, and not the school, and even on a weekend, it just your life changes so much with huge responsibilities of full time jobs, businesses, children, dogs, family commitments, you know, and so there's so much to fit in. So it's not like you can just sit there and have a nice cup of coffee and, you know, watch the sun glaze in through the curtains and then, you know, look to write what it is you want to write. That's just not reality, you know.
For many people.
You just can't really do that. And so what I like to do is have something that is effective, efficient and able to be done. And I do that with absolute commitment. So on an evening time, the only time I don't do it is if I have had like a little tipple, and that's even like a glass of wine or something, because my mind just isn't thinking as it would, perhaps as clearly as I would like it to think. So and I just don't do it.
You don't write that in the journal?
The next day I might reflect on that. How am I feeling? I don't drink in absolute excess as a rule. So
well, you drink infrequently at best.
Yeah, absolutely. So I don't have that absolute kind of block of memory necessarily. So
like another 3 or 4 nights a year.
Yeah.
Maybe one more after the 2 nights out.
Yeah. But I just don't. I just don't, mainly because I want to get to bed as soon as possible, because sleep is absolutely like my most important thing at the moment. But yeah, so those are the only times I don't. But like I say, when I have a little bit more time, I will sit and expand on things. So journaling was writing things down. That was something that was really instilled in me. And I think I spoke about this when we... a couple of years ago when I created the Chronicles of You. And I have journaled from being very, very young.
Talk about what started it?
Well, after something quite tragic that happened, I won't go into big details, but something very tragic happened when I was younger. I was 11, and it was a very painful experience. And the first experience that probably changed the course of my life, perhaps, I don't know. I think there's many experiences that change your courses. And one of the things was returning to school with the group of friends that I had at the time. We were taken into a different classroom because it had been quite a tragic thing that had occurred. So I think they were trying to protect us in a way. But there was clearly one very, very, very smart teacher who worked at my school back in the day, who had us write down what it was we felt, thought, heard, see, like everything that was going around in our minds. She had us just document everything.
Just write everything down. Stream of consciousness.
Yeah, but it wasn't, it was like you just had to keep writing it down. You just had to keep writing. Like the idea was, we're going to sit down here, girls, and you're just going to write whatever comes into your mind. You just keep writing, keep writing, keep writing. Let's just keep doing this. I mean, this was few years ago. But I remember writing it to my hand. I remember my fingers, my hand aching a little bit. And I remember putting my pen down and
this was thing. Back when you were conditioned to write with a pen. So
Yeah. it was definitely like even right now I'm getting that kind of, you know, the feeling. But at the time, like the feeling of everything just got wrote down. Like if you were feeling cold, if you were feeling this, if you were feeling that, whatever, all came down and that all came out onto the paper. And that's what we did. And at that time, I feel like it kind of begun that pattern that every time, or if something happened of great pain or trauma, I would just write it down, like how I felt, what I seen in my own mind, how.
So you came back to that.
I would come back to it and write it down.
Well, as a child, as a teenager, as a young adult.
I think after that, it was probably quite a few years after, because I had quite a nice school life. I mean, obviously, the tragic that happened of losing a very close friend was really awful. However, following that, I had quite an enjoyable school life, and that continued up. And I think I was probably... I used to still write things down. I think I mentioned this. I used to have little Forever Friends diaries. Uh-huh. I used to get those each Christmas.
With a padlock on?
No. I
fluffy
didn't,
cover?
It didn't, no, no. No, I was much, much more... I was much more tomboyish than that, much more down to earth than that. They still had the fluffy teddies and they were a little bit pink and peach, but I used to write little things down, little, like, keywords and things that had made me happy, things that had made me sad, just that kind of rhythm. And right up until probably I was in my early 20s, and then the Forever Friends diaries kind of pulled back a little bit and I got other diaries. Yeah. I mean, they went on for a while.
Wait, sort of unstructured, informal, or did you have a discipline and a rhythm with it even then?
Even then, I used to like it because I seen it as a way of... I was having a conversation with myself. And, mm-hmm. and people might know this and people might understand this. When you're in the car or you're walking around the shops or you're doing something, sometimes there'll be an internal narrative that's going on constantly, and I have that. And I know there are some people who just don't have that.
And there are categories of people who do not have an inner monologue.
Yeah, but I have
neurologically
quite,
not there.
Yeah, I have quite a very, very intense internal monologue about everything, you know, everything that I see. You know, if I see, I'll, like, for instance, looking out the window, I'll be thinking, you know, what shade of green are those windows, and there's a guy there and I wonder what he's doing in there, and he's got his jumper on, so it must be really cold in there. Like, it's like all of these things that are going on inside of my head whilst I'm paying attention. It's like I have this real hypervigilance of everything that's going on. I see and I hear. So for me to put it out into a book or a piece of paper or my diary, it almost gives my brain a rest for a little bit because I'm just looking at that and just like, right, okay, this, this and this.
And do you find it has a half-life, that process?
What do you mean, a half-life?
Well, like a sort of period of time that it takes to metabolise, like leave your system?
I look at it, I guess I don't retrial it like I would have initially. Mm-hmm. So before I've emptied it out, I go through trials, you know, like judge and jury trial, right? Okay, so how's that working? How's that happened? What would that happen? How would that work? What are this, 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 mm-hmm. this? You know, those trials.
All eventualities. Considered.
All eventualities. And then it kind of, once it's out and in there, I kind of, it doesn't completely disappear from my mind, but the trials mm-hmm. stop, and that's enough for me because
so it becomes a solid thing as yeah. opposed to a clump of possibility.
Yeah, yeah. And I think the biggest thing for me is after doing that when I was at school, it felt like it. I mean, it's always been something that happened to us as a group, and it's always something that we experienced at quite a young age. We were 11, mm-hmm. But I've never, and it doesn't instill the fear into me. Mm-hmm. I think, like, sometimes things.
What do you mean the fear? As in the process of writing?
Doesn't no, so fear? So the process of loss, the process of death, the process mm-hmm. of everything within the context of what occurred, which mm-hmm. I won't go into, because there's no need to, you know, but. It the energy towards it changes.
Okay.
So my energy, my feelings, my connection towards the event changed, if that makes sense. So.
And do you think part of that is the process of creating something that's fundamentally complete? Do you feel like there's a narrative that's completed, or?
I mean, there was further completions happened later on, mm-hmm. I think, especially when I began the shaman training. I kind of released a few extra little bits of things mm-hmm. with that. But I think I mentioned before, our school had yoga, and we had these kind of social evenings at the youth club, mm-hmm. And they would do yoga and dance and things like that. So even then, even when I could move and practice that, I always felt the movement and the practice and things like that was actually really nourishing to whatever energy was firing around your body, because that's what it's like. It's like this energy is like shooting and firing off around your body. So once you put it out and it's out there, I feel like it kind of allows your nervous system to have a little bit of peace. Mm-hmm. And I guess for me, sometimes the journaling is to help keep my nervous system just intact and stop it from firing off just so irregularly. Mm-hmm. Because I think that can happen quite a lot. And I know that this is a real serious side of journaling, and there's a really beautiful flowery side of journaling as well, which I do too. I have lots of different journals for lots of different things. but so I think for me, it seriously improved my headspace. Mm-hmm. It improved my ability to be in a social environment and not feel like people were going to ask questions and feel able to talk about it, I guess, up to a point that actually talking about it just wasn't actually doing any favours to anything or anyone anymore. So there was no need to talk about it. And, you know, it was a hard experience. And I feel like I wasn't as scarred from it as what I possibly could have been, but I don't know, because obviously the path that I had was the path that
you didn't
I had.
Have an identical twin that didn't journal.
Exactly, yeah. And I wasn't part of a trial being studied either. So,
and do you know anything about the other people in that group, whether they carried it on?
I do know, I mean, some of them are still, I mean, you know, we're still in, you know, a very distant contact, and there's a few people that I do still know. Mm-hmm. But I think you know, they all seem to be having just, you know, cracking on at life. I can't say, it's not my place to say either. Mm-hmm. But what I do know is that I think it for me was something that was remarkable enough that I continued doing it. Mm-hmm. And it became...
And you're still doing it 20 years later.
Yeah. It became part of my practice. Okay. And just every day. And you know, and again, like I say, anything tragic that happened, you know, when I was in my 20s, there was another very tragic thing happened, and that also ended in death. Mm-hmm. Of somebody very, very close to me. And then, you know, we fast forward into...
You're being slightly vague about these details in a suspicious sort of way now.
Oh, with the death? No. No, I mean, it was a partner of mine that, I mean, you were very aware, you know, and you know, sadly, a brain tumour was diagnosed, and that was that. Mm-hmm. And then after that, in my 30s, trying for a baby. And that ended in lots of losses. So all of these, I then really delved deep back into the real serious element of journaling, where I wrote about what I felt, wrote about what I seen, what I heard, what I could hear doctors and nurses saying, what happened, what the outcome was, what I seen, how the scans were, you know, everything that came with it, what I would have named these children and what I assumed or presumed their faces would look like, their hair colour would be, their futures would be, the future that they never had or never were able to have. All of these things all got just written down. And I remember after the birth of Lowell, because they were aware of my case, as many, many, many women I know suffer this repeatedly, and it's so sad that it is actually very normal now, which is incredibly heartbreaking. And then the awareness is far more out there than it was.
It's certainly picking up.
Yeah. But then when, obviously, Lowell was born, in my mind, it was this absolutely idyllic, beautiful, great experience in the labour where it was just right until the very last moment in my mind. I thought that the doctors thought it was a good idea that I had a C-section for various complications that were occurring. I wasn't aware of the extent of that because in my mind, in my nice breath work, hypnobirthing, you know, chilled energy, accepting energy, I was actually quite all right. And after that, I remember writing a little bit down, but then I was being called back in by the counselling service from the RVI saying to me, you know, we need to, you know,
do you want to talk about what happened?
Go through what happened. And I was just like, oh, really? It was quite wonderful, really, wasn't it? It was like, would you like to read your notes? And I said, okay. And when I looked at the notes, that was an entirely different play-by-play account to what I recall. And after reading it, it actually almost felt like I was an out-of-body experience. I was like, what?
Because of the dissonance?
But because I had an intention. Mm-hmm. And my intention was to bring my child into this world alive and remain alive myself. Mm-hmm. And that was my intention. In no way, shape or form was that going to be in any other format. That was that. That was what was happening and that's what the outcome was going to be. Mm-hmm. End of story. So I guess the panic and the urgency that the staff felt under certain situations and readings that were coming off their machines and everything that was going on that they could see and how the presenting condition was to them for myself and my unborn child, they seen something very different. But I think even my mind, I remember saying, don't worry, I'll get him out. Don't worry, I'll get him out. I think I kept saying that I kept saying, like, don't worry, like, it will be okay. We'll get him out. Until they said, like, straight, like, into the emergency room now. We need to get him out now. And so when I read through, I was like, oh, my gosh, I just wasn't aware of it. And I think it was interesting because she was quite shocked at my response. And I was shocked at her response. And I even had my notes, my journal with me. And I said, can I now show you what I wrote about the labour? And she was really taken back because she thought I had had this really terrible experience. And I think I spoke to one of my friends about this afterwards because she had quite a bad experience and she went in for counselling and she said, what did you think about it? And I said, well, actually, it told me stuff that I couldn't even recall. It wasn't even part of my... like memory. So for me, I feel like that was a real lesson for me because I then went home, looked at what I'd wrote in my journal and then rewrote another one for how I felt about that. And then understood that actually, even though I'd been writing these things and doing it in my journal, I'd managed to almost create a situation where I was almost, I think, in my mind, like journaling in my mind of what I wanted the outcome to be, what's happening, what's going on, what's occurring, and almost going through that in my mind. Does that make sense? Almost like in my mind, I'm doing this tick list of, right, well, I just need this to be the outcome. And that's what I'm kind of manifesting. And so for me, I had to re-journal on that because I didn't understand how something could be so different. I mean, I know that there's lots of endorphins and oxytocin and everything goes on at that time, which, I mean...
Occasional bit of gas and air.
Occasional bit of gas and air, which, my gosh. I mean, first time I'd ever had that. I mean, I don't know. Do you have it for anything else?
Not legally, I don't think. I'm sure you do.
But I mean, it was
dentistry. Is that the same thing?
I have no idea. But it was so chilled. It was like, this is so relaxed. I remember being super chilled with it, which obviously I didn't want it to wipe my memory. But yeah. So then when I reflected in it when I came home and I was journaling because she gave me a copy of it. over the two, I thought, oh gosh, like that is so different. So how did I get that? And that was what happened. And I think it was because I almost re-narrated it, if that makes sense. So I kind of matched it up and re-journaled about that. And that's why I then realised actually sometimes what you think and what occurs aren't necessarily the same thing.
No.
You know, so...
And does that matter in a journaling process? Does it matter that it's an accurate reflection of reality or not?
No, but it's something you have to consider. Uh-huh. It's something you always have to consider. So, you know, when I'm saying at the end of the day, would there be anything I would want to change? Then I need to think, well, I need to think wider, broader when I think about that. Because if it's something reflecting on a response or a behaviour or a mistake or something that I made, I need to reflect on, okay, now let's run through what that was. So almost put myself back in that position. And I guess that comes back to where I was all those years ago, where, you know, the situation was you put yourself right where you are, right there in that position, and you write what comes up, what emotions are coming up, what you're feeling, what's going on, how you're responding, all of those things. And I think to then transport yourself back into that almost allows you to relive the emotions a little bit, but relive it so you're almost watching it and replaying it and then thinking, well, I would change that and I would change that and I wouldn't have said this and I would have done this and I would have done that instead.
Within the replaying of the scenario, you've explicitly taken an objective vantage point as opposed to the experience you had at the time, which
if needs be, yes. If needs be, yes. If needs be. Not always. Not always, because some things can't be changed. You know, so for instance...
Well, none of it can be changed.
Well, no, none of it... No, but it can be in the future. but if you have... alarm didn't go off and you've left late, which has pushed all of your day back, and then things like that, you can't. There's nothing you can do about that. It's just been a glitch in technology or whatever. There has to be an understanding.
Maybe
that...
Maybe Mercury?
No, no, no. You have to understand that there's nothing that you can do about that, and that element needs to be let go of. But if, say...
So there's acceptance alongside...
There's acceptance, yeah. And then, for instance, if I leave the house and I'm already running late and then I get to the metro station and the gates come down and then there's 15 trains going past and I'm sat there for 10 minutes waiting, there's nothing I can do about that. I have to let that go. But if, you know, I ran out of petrol or I need to go to petrol, there's something I could have done about that, you know? I could have gone and put petrol in as soon as the red light came on or something like that, you know? I mean, they're very crude examples, but, you know, this is...
Until we get an electric car.
Well, yeah, someone's just been talking about that, actually. So, yes, yeah, so that's where I'm at. I feel like I've talked a lot there.
You have a little bit.
So sorry. I just give my voice a rest.
Well, I think one thing that I would add into that remit is that a huge amount of credit is due to the staff that were there at the time of your birth. Because even though obviously I was in a slightly different vantage point and was aware of the progression of the decisions that were being made, actually the professionalism and the way that you were supported through that by those practitioners was incredible.
It's so, an incredible hospital. It's an incredible unit.
It is.
It's
so I think a degree of their explicit care was part of what allowed you to have such a experience, I think.
Yeah, and I think that's the other thing that you can get, gain perhaps. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one thing that I have started gaining more so, is trust. Is trust. And that's one thing that I tend to talk
trust
about.
Trust in people? Trust in...
In general. In life.
Trust as an attitude.
You have to understand that. So there's two ways that I look at this. I think that the life puts you on a path sometimes, and you have to kind of trust that. There's a pavement you can pound. And then sometimes there will be internal things that occur that can sometimes reel you off that path, and sometimes you can go off that path, and that's not necessarily the plan, but it does mean that once you're off, you kind of have to find your way back again. Mm-hmm. And usually fear is what I think drives you off your path. That's what I actually think. That's my own personal opinion. This is not a fact. There's no studies have been done. It's just my opinion. But what I find is that, especially with this kind of situation, is the more that you write things down, the more you can reflect back on how you were feeling then and there. It's not a projection of what you think you were feeling or what you thought might have happened. It's there. You wrote it down. Your feelings and whatever occurred is there in a piece of paper. So when you look back over your year, your 2 years, or in my case, like 25 years or something ridiculous like that of diaries that I've got, actually, I think one time we put some in the fire. We had a full moon and I was letting go of something. I can't remember what it was. Past stuff. And I think we put some in the fire. But either way, I'm diverting here. You can look back and you can see truthfully how you were feeling at that time. And what I learnt from that was you just have to trust the process, because at each step and at each way, things tend to just work out. Even if you look back and I think, oh my God, at that point I was so low. At that point this was such a terrible scenario, situation, et cetera, et cetera. But then it then carved its way and built its way in order to allow me to arrive at a point that was actually so wonderful that I had all of my prayers answered, for want of a better phrase. But, you know, the writing about these things help you process, I think, but also helps you navigate your own truth, I guess is what I'm trying to say. So then the trust has to be there that everything else has worked out up until this point. So it's kind of going to continue in that same trajectory. What do you think?
Well, I think that there's a part of that that implies that you're going beyond your capacity to comprehend what might be coming. There's something about it that accepts the fact that actually the realism of micromanaging the life isn't there. And actually, even were it possible, that you're incapable of understanding what is to come. And so the idea that you can predict it all is hopeless. But actually there is a capacity to commit to a practice with the reassurance that if you're putting in the appropriate effort and the appropriate reflection, that you can move with discernment along that pathway, irrespective and with acceptance, of course, of where it's ending up. And I think as well, one thing that came to my mind as you were talking is that actually we're broadly unaware of how faulty in many ways or at least how mismatched our understanding of how our cognition works and how our cognition actually works is. One thing I think that people generally understand poorly is that for the most part, memory is a reconstructive process.
Yeah, this is true.
You know, your memory doesn't function in the same way that picking up a photograph does. There's not a snapshot that's there that you pull out and it is as it is. It's something that's filtered and remade. It's literally recrafted each time you bring it to mind. In the same way that, people have to be very careful in, I don't know why I'm talking about police, like leading questions and false testimony everyone's seen, what's that film with Leonardo DiCaprio where Inception, where their job is to plant people's memories and make them think and all these things. You know, your memory basically is making up its own version of events as things go along. And so you're prone to all sorts of biases within that narrative. And so actually to have the capacity to stop and look, well, actually, no, there are tinted glasses here, mm-hmm. there is negativity bias here, mm. I'm prone to inflate and deflate myself in that narrative. There's something inescapable then about a tangible record of it. And your ability to reflect through those records is a testament to your capacity to suspend your...
like the pretense.
Yeah, mm-hmm. the way that you think that it is, the way that you're prone to sculpt a narrative, to sort of polish it, if you like, as it goes on.
Yeah, because I think if you think about, if somebody has a... So, and I guess this is why I really mm-hmm. love journaling mm-hmm. over perhaps speaking to a counsellor or a person, is that recount then becomes a recount mm-hmm. to somebody else, and then their perception adds pointers too. Mm-hmm. And then it becomes this kind of jigsaw of not only your recount, but mm-hmm. their perception of what your recount is. Mm-hmm. It's guess those like whispers that go down the line, and then by the time it kind of gets returned, it's something completely different. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
Certainly that's a risk of therapy in all its forms. Mm-hmm. But sort of unskilled talking about things is that... I know. The risk is that actually what you do is, rather than learning a lesson that can be applied and moved on from, mm-hmm. that you craft a narrative that justifies something.
Mm-hmm. So I guess the question is, do you journal?
I do not journal. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I don't journal. I don't journal. And it isn't that I don't understand the value of journaling. But I don't journal.
Yeah. No, I mean, I knew the answer to that question already.
You did.
But I think... I just think that writing something mm-hmm. down has such an impact between your heart and your headspace as well. Mm-hmm. And for me, it really connects the two. Mm-hmm. For me, okay, right. Let me just, maybe I romanticize it, okay? Mm-hmm. I just think about times when writing was all you had, okay? So, mm-hmm. you know, the...
As in before digital media was an alternative, or...?
No, I mean, when people didn't live together, when people were at war, where people lived or had to travel, went on voyages on ships in the middle of nowhere, and they had to wait until they docked into somewhere in order to find a post office to then, you know, go and post the letter off to their loved one, mm-hmm. you know, that kind of thing, where they would write about what they had done, their experiences, how they were, what they were feeling, what they were missing, what they were wishing for, all of these things, mm-hmm. these mm-hmm. almost love letters, I guess, that they would send home, whether it be their mother, their father, their grandparents, their loved ones, their children, whomever it was.
Like how you put family members and then loved ones as if it were a separate category.
No, I mean, well, when I say that, it's like, as in, like, there could be a young man who's gone off, but there could also be somebody who they've fallen in love with, and they're being kept apart by work or war or whatever, job commitments, whatever, because it wasn't necessarily an automatic thing that you would meet somebody and you would move in a house and things would be just hunky-dory and that was that. Mm-hmm. It's such a modern way to think now, is it, that everything is just planned out for you. You automatically, you know, you go to school, you leave school, you go to uni, you get a job, you meet somebody, you move in a house together and you get a dog, you get a have a child, have another child, dun-dun. You know, it's like you live happily ever after. After. I don't know who that was. I slipped back into the... The Andrews. But no, there were...
One does live happily.
But it was that thing where it was just such a time to be completely with yourself as well, where you're writing these letters and you're sending them off. And then again, during the wars, you know, these people who'd had to go off to war, and they would be 19, 20, 21-year-old, and off they would go. They would just met somebody, you know, at the local community centre or the church hall at a dance. And, you know, they're gone. And all they had was pen and paper, and they could write to their loved ones. But they would write about what happened during the war, what was going on, what was occurring, and all of these things. And then that would come back. And then and in that respect, I think if you think about the people who came back from the wars compared to how modern day society is, it's like there's a constant war going on. Everyone's so traumatized, everyone's so reactive, everyone's so, you know, full of something. But then you have this huge whole generation that we're literally seeing disappear now, mm-hmm. up into the stars. But they're actual, like, heroes that, you know, didn't have any choice, had to go to war. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. they came back and, you know, they had a tough time coming back, but they did, and they kind of cracked on with it and mm-hmm. had their families and so on and so forth. But I wonder if writing about that, writing their letters, yeah, the letters that came, and it's always been something I've been super curious about, is if the writing of their occurrences and what they've seen and what happened and just their longing to know that there's something bigger at the end of it, there's something better. They had this trust that they were doing something that was for the greater good, and that at the end they would meet their loved ones, however which way. I kind of, in my heart, and like I said, maybe I'm romanticising this, but I kind of feel like that was kind of, if that can be a thing, then that's how I feel about the journaling. I don't think at some point someone will read all of these and think, oh my gosh. But for me, I kind
You'll
of think...
craft your memoirs from them one day.
I don't think so. There's half of them you probably can't even read because like, I'm just scribbling on a morning before I leave and on a night. But does that kind of make sense? But in my mind, and I guess that's how I was moving through the Chronicles of You, because when I created that, obviously I wanted something that was for every single day, because I was always buying 3 or 4 journals throughout the year, and I wanted one that was just stable. I'm happy to have one about this, about that, about the other, but I'm frivolous with that. But there was one that
There's something accountable, isn't there, when you realise out of 365 days worth of pages, as opposed to 100 pages for a year, where the big blanks are becomes almost part of the reflective process.
And interestingly, so if me, on my chronicles, my big blanks happen during half terms and school holidays. You know, where the routine kind of goes out the window a little bit. And even on retreats, I have a smaller one that I take away with me on retreats. But I will write in a retreat, refer, retreat, retreat. So I can still have those days almost completed. But the actual physical time that I'm here and I don't fill it in, it's usually during
holidays.
And so I notice the pattern. When there's a routine in the day, I can keep up with it. When the routine kind of, even one or two things change in that routine, it then affects how things then go. But I made an effort this year on the 1st of January to begin that, despite Lowell not being at school and despite him not going back to school until the 9th. I made the effort to keep up with that every single day and made sure that I completed a journal every single day. And so far, so good, but what are we, 10 days in or something like that, 11 days in? But my intention is wholeheartedly on creating, so like bringing things in. I'm inviting things in this year. Because last year was recovering still from the pandemic, and I think this year is about really drawing things in and pulling things in, and this is, you know, the big on my mood board that
daring to dream again.
On my mood board from 2020, my end goal was to go to Peru in 2025, and you know, it started coming together the last few months of 2023. And, you know, it's booked, it's secure, we have it, and it's there.
Paid the deposit this morning.
Paid the deposit, the second deposit this morning.
Trying to work out how.
To get to Peru. Because for me, that is something that I feel like I really called in. Because it's really, it's difficult, like it's hard. You know, finding spaces and areas that are safe and can support all of the group's needs and is
authentic
and isn't absolutely, you know, fortune.
Extortionate, yeah.
It's hard. And so you know, and after months and months and months and months and months, I mean, it must have been about 7 or 8 months, I was researching and speaking to people and Zooming people and trying to find places. And every time they were showing me around, I was just like, well, no. That was that. I mean, there was one that they showed me around and it had a bar. It's like a fully stocked bar with like cocoa on it. I was just like, what? Aren't you in the Sacred Valley? Are you not a retreat centre? well, you know, we're also a hotel. Okay, and that's fine, but don't sell yourself as a retreat centre that does ABC or whatever. But it just came together, and it just happened. But it wasn't until right towards the end part of 2023, so it kind of gave me the signal that actually I can actually start asking for things again, because I think there was a real part of me that felt really rude trying to like invite in things and manifest things and create things. And so I just kept, you know, recycling what it is I know, what it is I trusted, before I started inviting in new energies and new things to do. Because that, I mean, that's what we do. That's how we created this, just intention. And
effort and legwork.
Effort. Research. And
sweat, tears.
But for the love of it, though, you know, I don't say that on a negative vibe, but it's absolutely so that's why my journaling is taking me this year, really inviting things in, really, really being strong on the air.
And do you feel like part of the journaling process allows you to understand how to engage with the reality of that process?
What do you mean?
I mean, it's part of the journaling process, almost.
For inviting things in?
No, I don't mean in a sort of out to the universe, let's hope it comes well.
Is
there something procedural about it? If there's something sort of operational about it? Or is it separate from that?
No, there is an intertwining one, yeah. So there is definitely an element of
practicality about it. Procedure maybe is the right word.
Procedure, yeah. Where I have to, I kind of think everything is kind of vibrational. There was something that, I can't remember. There was this. I don't want to say it was fake because again, I don't know for sure, but I know.
Fake or fate?
Fake. It's about, you know, about vibrations and plants and growth. Can you remember something about that?
About words. There was a whole study that said if you say nice words to plants, they grow well.
That's right.
And if you say harsh words to plants, they don't.
That's incorrect.
And then they looked deeper and it was actually that any sort of harsh sound.
Any vibration.
Yeah.
That was it. Thank you. So that's what I'm kind of saying. So sorry, I know that I did a round on Instagram, didn't it? And I remember seeing it and thinking, oh no.
Yeah.
But yes, there was definitely an element of that vibrational intention. So when you put something out there, that kind of vibration changes. And it's the same with sound and plants. If there is that positive vibration that you put out there, and when I say positive, I just wishful, that thing, that encouragement. So I'm not going to say positive, I'm going to say that encouraging energy out there. Then that vibration changes. You know that if you go, into a store, and people might be doing this quite a lot at the moment because, you know, it is post-Christmas, and sometimes you get things around Christmas time or in the sales, and then you get it home and then you look at it a week later and think, I should never have bought that, I'm going to have to take that back or whatever, or you got a gift from somebody and it just doesn't quite fit or isn't quite aligning with you, but you don't have the receipt, so somehow you have to return it or exchange it or whatever. You know that if you go into the shop and you're, I want this changing, you need to exchange this, that you will be met with almost the same, well, no, we're not accepting that, you don't have your receipt. But if you go in and say, hi, how are you? Are you having a nice day? I'm really sorry, but I have this item. Is there any way possible that I can exchange this? Or and you'll know that going in with that energy slightly changes what you're met with. And so that's it. It's the vibration of the energy that you go in with. You'll know that.
Well, that's a bit like saying every force has an equal and opposite reaction.
Yeah, behavior breeds behavior, you know? And it's like there will be classes here and there will be students who will say, oh, you know, I could feel this energy from this person or this energy from that person, because your energy vibrates across the room. And especially if you're the leading teacher. So if you come in and you're unwell or you're feeling in your head about something or you're feeling at all, you know, frustrated, or if you come in and you're feeling airy and fairy and light and easy, that energy then effervesces through the actual room, and people then feel that. I know sometimes if I come in to do meditation or something like that, and I'm feeling I've been running late, or Lowell's swimming ran over, or something happened in order to hold me back, I'm going in with really intense energies, and I have to sit and almost reset myself before I go in, because I know that whatever energy I'm putting out there will be felt in the room. So yeah, whatever energy you're putting out, kind of it reverberates around you, and there's just atoms all over the air. Everything is just vibrational, you know. Everything is just a vibration. So if your vibration is that, then that is met with the matching vibration. Then it just expands bigger and bigger and bigger, doesn't it? So it's kind of how I see it in my really strange, probably on the spectrum somewhere, mind. Although I'm not officially diagnosed.
No.
I don't think I am. But either way, that's how I picture it in my kind of energy. Does that make sense? Am I just yabbering now?
Do you feel like you're yabbering now?
Well, do you know what? I am a bit of a yabberer, so, you know.
Will you journal about it later?
I'm definitely be journaling about it. But yeah, I'll delve into it.
I think one thing that puts people off journaling is that it's considered indulgent and even to some degree sort of narcissistic. It fits into an aspect of the wellness world that people consider fundamentally detached from the troubles that most people face.
Firstly, can I just say, please don't say wellness world. It makes me feel so, I mean, who was it who said something the other day? It was somebody on the TV. There was somebody said something about the toxic wellness. Mm-hmm. What was that again we watched? We were watching something. I don't know if it was a movie or there was something. And unfortunately, it's right. It's like it's become...
I mean, people like to accuse other people of being toxic within all sorts of environments.
So. No. It was somebody who's actually... It was like an older actor, I think, who was saying something. And it was tongue-in-cheek. Mm-hmm. But I can't remember because I watch so many things now because I'm trying to not scroll. Other than... And I feel really terrible here that I'm about to promote somebody's, I don't know if she does a podcast, but that Julia Cameron? Yeah. Julia Cameron, she blows my mind. She is so funny. And her story is quite a heartfelt story and how she just brings such humor to everything and such strength But also the absolute tongue in cheek. I mean, she just, but she does it with you know, great tongue in cheek. But, you know, she does that as well. I think she has been to Ibiza. She's, you know, been, she takes a mick out of kind of the wellness world, but she's in it herself. She's part of it herself as well. So between watching stuff like that's the only thing I like to watch now and then. And the TV, I couldn't tell you who it was who said it. Okay. But it was something along the lines of it's so saturated, it's so oversaturated now that you can't to sift through it and find the actual the genuine or the things that really suit you or the things that actually work for you is too exhausting that actually people are turning away from it now. And that's super sad. That's really, really sad. Because it has grown hugely, especially I think since lockdown, since the pandemic. That's when we've really seen a surge. But I think there can't be enough of it.
Well, I would agree, but then I would also say that the problem is that whenever anything becomes saturated, you're not talking about the principles of it becoming saturated. Because you can't have too much compassion for other people and too many practices that help people regulate, but you can have far too much commodification of those things. Mm. And so if people are being turned off the generation of products that are ineffective, then I don't think that's a bad thing. I think the issue potentially is that what you end up then is losing the baby with the bathwater.
Right. It's pretty harsh. Of a metaphor.
It's a harsh metaphor.
Where did that come from?
Well, you can't see the forest for the trees. Though.
That's a better one. Better one. Yeah.
Or at least you can't see the trees for the forest.
What he was saying, but I guess the way that I'm walking is if you're able to put something down and reflect and understand yourself and get to know yourself. Then you understand your patterns and you can call yourself up upon them. And so then that stops that narcissist, like kind of stops that from happening because you're rechecking yourself. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I don't think to sit and be accountable for what it is you say and you do and the things that you put out there. I think
accountability is hugely lacking. For the most part,
well, I think it's the first and foremost for me, and I think that people don't want to take accountability. They want to run away from it. They just want to, you know, don't want to talk about that. I'm out. You know, but in my very first job, if I had to be accountable for every single thing, I had to write everything down, sign it, date it, every single thing that I did. So I
with real life immediate consequences.
I learned about accountability from my very first, very first proper job. You know, working in a hospital, you have to be accountable for everything. Every time you are present with a patient, every single time. So accountability just becomes something. And even sometimes, I wouldn't even think twice about taking accountability for something I hadn't even done, because if there was something that had occurred, I would just say, oh yeah, okay, I'll sort that out. I can deal with that. Don't worry, it won't happen again. Even if it was me or my colleague or whatever, it was done by our team.
I was gonna say.
So it had to be, that was that. It was how it was. So yeah, so accountability for yourself is something that is a hugely important factor to allow yourself to grow within not just this industry, but just grow within yourself. And then it allows you the space to be who you are genuinely, not a figment of your imagination.
So then journaling, you were talking about using journaling this year as a way of understanding what you want to invite in. But what I think you've just said there is that your journaling process isn't a wish list, but actually it's a dissection of the reasons, or at least a dissection of the obstacles to the things that you're inviting in.
Yeah. So this is why I have a few journals. And this is the complication with my journaling. So yes and yes. Mm-hmm. And in an actual fact, one of the girls asked me about the Chronicles workshop today. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know, the very first time I ran, I think it was 2 years ago, it was, there was a situation where what I try to do mm-hmm. is allow you to understand your patterns and understand things that occur that then end up inviting in certain behaviours from people or certain reasons that things happen. Does that make sense? So if my pattern of behaviour is in a certain way, then that will encourage somebody to behave a certain way towards me. But then I might not like that way that that person is behaving towards me. But I have to understand that what is it I have done in order for that to be the outcome? Mm-hmm. So
you're looking at causality within yes. your life.
Yes, and so
taking responsibility.
Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of how we begun it, mm-hmm. And it got quite deep, but then it mm-hmm. gets quite light. But what we needed to do is we needed to understand what it is we are physically mm-hmm. putting out there mm-hmm. to then. I mean, not all things.
No, when you say physically putting out there, do you mean
vibrationally?
Vibrationally.
Mm. Or vibrationally, vocally, mm-hmm. in our actions, in our behaviours, uh-huh. all of those things. So, for instance, if you have a situation where you have several siblings, but all the responsibility for your elderly parents are always falling upon you, you need to understand why that is always falling upon you. Why do your younger siblings not feel it's their responsibility to help with their parents? And is that because you've always just taken charge, you've always just dealt with it, and so they feel like they can just take the back seat and just not do anything? It's as simple as that, you know, that kind of way.
Yeah. So I think when you said vibrationally, I think that sounds less tangible. But actually what you're saying is that there's a reality to how you are interfacing with the world. Mm. And as a result, the world is reflecting mm. and that you are directly addressing that.
But also, when I say vibrationally, I mean the things that you don't say. Mm-hmm. The things that you want to say, but mm-hmm. you don't say. So mm-hmm. that's what I mean by vibration. So you can not say anything and then hold your hands up and say, mm-hmm. hey, I didn't say that, I haven't said that. Mm-hmm. But if it's going around in your head, then it's still out there. The energy is out there still. So mm-hmm. it's better you say it so it's not misconstrued or misunderstood or felt as, I don't know, mm-hmm. You're
or
not saying.
You can hope so.
Mm-hmm. You're not saying mm-hmm. what you really feel, and then they don't have that. Well, you didn't say that. You can say, well, I did say this. So, you know, could you please help with our parents? And the younger siblings will say, well, you didn't ask. Well, I'm asking you now. You know, you need, it's that kind of responsibility. So that's what I mean. I mean, that's, again, a very, you know, random example, but that's how.
Speaking of responsibility, though, we are technically responsible for a child who has a tennis lesson. What time is it?
1 hour, 12 minutes.
Oh, my gosh.
It is quarter to four. Ooh. What time is this? Is it quarter to five?
I have no idea. But anyway, I'm so sorry we've talked on for so long.
Well, I think we should consider a concluding point.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If you could put into three sentences what journaling is for you, what would those three things be?
Getting to know myself.
Mm-hmm.
And understanding myself. That's the same mm-hmm. sentence, really. That's the same mm-hmm. one. You know?
I don't know. I think that getting to know yourself is one thing.
Okay, there we are. I'll take the two.
Understanding what that means is a second thing.
And then helping to process.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you can't really dry your washing if you don't put it out on the line. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know where I got that from. It's like, you know, you can't
dry your washing unless you
put your dirty laundry out. So, well, actually, you can't. You can put it on a radiator, but it never dries nicely, does it? No, you can put it on an airer. It doesn't really dry nicely, but you can't really properly dry your clothes unless it's blowing in the breeze. And that's the thing. If you put your pen to paper, your words are blowing in the breeze and they're out there. And that is that.
Wonderful.
You're very welcome. Come back to me next week for more metaphors.